Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. When you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Good evening. Happy Shabbat to one and all. I'm here with JB and Kirk. How are you guys?
Doing good.
Kirk and I with Scott record an observations program earlier today. BB has posted it already. Dealt with sort of the conclusion of Yahweh's conversations with Noah about not only building the ark, but of establishing a covenant with him after ridding the world of all of the negative influences. It was interesting because it really sets the foundation for what we're reading throughout Yeshaya Isaiah. It's the same thing. It's got over and over again saying, I'm disgusted by everything that is of man. I find it revolting. And ultimately, because it's revolting, and this is everything to do with religion. I mean, he routinely calls the religious idiots. But everything to do with religion, politics, he's not so much calling the politicians, the government, the rulers, idiots, as he is constantly using the raw words, calling them wicked and immoral and disgusting and twisted and the like. But there's so many wonderful lessons in the story of Noah. The idea that Yahweh introduced himself to Noah because he was the one person that had recognized that all human schemes, religious, political, military, you name it, were disgusting, and he walked away from them. And that's what made it possible for Yahweh to engage with him. And it's this exact same story with Abraham. You know, he was way out of town. You know, he was in Haran, which is a very long way from Ur. You know, the same thing was true with Moshe. You know, he grew up in the midst of Egypt, in Pharaoh's household. And he was a long way from that in Western Arabia. You know, that's why Yahweh was in position to introduce himself to these individuals. Why they were useful is they had first walked away from religion. Now that, and politics, that doesn't mean everybody has to do that. There's some people that aren't really all that into those things and never have been. JB, you were never religious. I was religious and political and pro-military and patriotic, so I had to do a lot of backtracking before I was even approachable. I had a lot to unlearn, a lot to be sorry for. But you know, in your case, you weren't raised in it, and so you didn't have nearly as much. So you were political, okay? So you still had to disengage there as well. But it is a marvelous story because, you know, the thing that so many people get wrong with God is they think that God is either all-forgiving or they think that that you need to make a profession of faith or that salvation is a gift of God and there's nothing you need to, or can do for it. And none of those things are true. Noah met the terms and conditions of the covenant, and he listened to Yahweh. He accepted what he said, didn't change it, didn't do anything other than act upon it, and exerted enormous amount of energy acting upon Yahweh's instruction. As such, he was in a position to engage in a covenant with Yahweh and be saved in the midst of a lot of people who were not. I don't know how many people were alive then, but it was probably the 1 in a million rule we're experiencing even today. So I really like the story of Noah. It is so extraordinarily insightful. And, you know, I just get a kick out of how stupid the scholars are where they say, you know, it is a fable that's based on the Gilgamesh epic and the like. And, of course, I've read the Gilgamesh, all 12 books of it. And the discord between the two stories is 99.9%. The congruence between the stories is a handful of very minor details. And the story of Noah and the flood is absolutely true, and it's easily provable. That's not the purpose of the story. The purpose of the story is to tell us about how you engage in the covenant. And for that, it is a beautiful story. I do want to pick back up on the 11th chapter of Yahshua. Even though we're back in, way earlier in the, we were covering the 9th chapter of observations for our time in our program on observations, we did jump ahead to the 11th chapter because the 11th chapter essentially spoke of how an individual would be given this opportunity, empowered by the Spirit, used to write a sign, and that sign would be used for three purposes by God. And it appears that the sign is this book that we're covering, which is Observations for Our Time. And so we jumped ahead in the program to cover that because it's important. You know, if in fact that analysis is valid, and I'm unaware of any alternative. And we've really been through this every which way, and the difficulty of observations for a time not being the sign is that not only is there nothing that has done and can do what we are doing, particularly basing it now on the story of Yahshua and the story of and the words of Dode, as we are taught by the Torah to participate in the covenant, there isn't enough time as an implement, which this individual is that writes this thing. There isn't enough time as an implement to expose and condemn the big religions of our day. Islam, Christianity, socialist, secular humanism, and Judaism. And then at the same time, get to know Yahweh through his Torah, translate his word, and share it with the chosen people. And I've been retired.
And I've been voted into a corner, didn't you?
Yeah, 10 hours a day, 6 days a week for the past 15 years at this. And, I'm not fast, and I've got no credentials, and, but the fact is, I'm not done, and I've got 15 years. Yeah, you can't do it unless you're retired, and you better be passionate about it. You're going to give up everything else but, family to do it. It's a fun thing to do, but there's not enough time. And so the only way that Yahweh could create a sign that he can use in this way is for the individual who he uses to be a nabi, to be a prophet, not a stick. You know, a choder is a stick. This is a choder. It's a stick. You can't use. There's no time left to write this thing with a stick like a pencil. There's only enough time left to convey it as a knobby prophet. And I ain't no knobby prophet. I don't think there are any around. And if
there will be one.
And if God, predicting one, he would use choder. He would use Dode uses a really derogatory term. He ain't using a thin, flexible implement, a tertiary stem off a secondary branch. That's not what he's going to use. And, he made it very clear. This is not coming from another knobby prophet. There is no indication that there will be any knobby prophets until one of the two individuals during the last days was a prophet. I don't know if he's going to be in the role of a prophet for the, maybe 3 years during the end time. I don't know if he's going to be in that same role, but, if it's Enoch and Elijah, Enoch was not a prophet, but Elijah was, and we know of their role.
Contrary to Islam.
Yeah, but we know of their role, but there's no indication they're going to write anything. And the only sign that they hold up is a Malach is going to hold up the 10 statements that he etched in stone. That's not a sign. That goes well beyond that. And if we were dealing with a Nabi here, we need to understand Nabis don't write signs.
No, Nabis
add to the Torah prophets and Psalms. And so this is not a prophet, and God's pretty clear about how He uses this individual. And the individual is irrelevant, other than here's one of the most amazing and profound prophecies in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, and it is talking about this implement, and the only purpose of the implement is to draw attention to the sign. Because Yahweh wants His children, He really wants three groups of people to notice it, but particularly His children, the children of Israel, so that they come home. And so that's the reason He tells the story of the children. I think there's another reason for it, too. And that is that the Yahweh has gone to great length, and I think it was in the 10th chapter of Yeshaya, to speak of Satan, who he refers to in that chapter as the Assyrian. And the big deal he makes about Satan is this is an implement, a tool that God created. And the tool, all of a sudden, thinks that he's more important than the one that created it and is using it. And Yahweh says, Satan is nothing but a thin plank of wood. He's just a tool. And so for Yahweh to take a twig and have a twig create a sign because of his word and his inspiration, it said, okay, because of who I am, I can use a twig to outmaneuver Satan. So that's part of the reason. God's got a sense of humor here. And in context, God is saying, okay, Satan, you think you're so great. You think you're more important than I am. You're positioning yourself as the God of religion. You're behind every government leader in the world. And you think you're so fantastic. And you're nothing but an implement. So I'm going to show you what I can do with an implement. I'm going to take a stick. A simple stem. And this is what I'm going to do with it. I'm going to defeat you.
And where are you at?
With a stick. Not because the stick's important, but because the one wielding it's important. Kirk, JB, I think before we get into this, just one last thought, which is that right from the beginning, from the the first paragraph of the first chapter that I wrote of Yad Eyah going back 12 years ago. The first thing that I tried to convey in the prologue was I'm irrelevant. I'm just a flawed implement. Reading, studying what Yahweh has conveyed to all of us, trying to translate it accurately, striving to understand it, pondering it, and sharing what I learned. So, please, don't consider me to be anything more than just a flawed implement, and the story is not about me. I'm irrelevant in this this whole thing. And that is what a choder, a stem is. It's just a twig off of a secondary branch, but in the right tree, in the tree of lives. All right, with that, let's review where we were, and then we'll move into new territory. This is Yashayah, Isaiah 11:1, and a stem, a small shoot or secondary branch, has come out and will be extended for a limited period of time from the stump, from the trunk, which has been cut down and yet is still capable of supporting new growth, of Yeshe standing out and being noticed. And a secondary branch, a shoot or sprout to observe from his root, will be extended from his base, from the foundation, which keeps him anchored and nourished, continuing to bear an abundance of fruit, encouraging productivity in others. And the spirit, the divine power and energy, the mind and essence, the feminine touch and understanding, even the acceptance and light of Yahweh, will be placed upon him, energizing him, never departing, settling down upon him and remaining, allied and associated with him, assuring him of the most favorable outcome, while enabling him to remain composed and to prevail, no matter the challenge. The spirit of providing the ability to understand. Yeah, it goes on from there. There are two things I just want to say before we go on from there. First of all, the reason that this stem succeeds is because the Spirit makes it so. Second of all, the way the Spirit succeeds is he provides this stick, this implement, the ability to understand. You know, I've been doing this, fellas, now for 16 years. I made a statement early on when the first job, which was on Islam. And the statement was that by using the biographical and chronological hadith presentations regarding Muhammad's words and deeds, I was able to reorder the Quran chronologically and set it into the context of Muhammad's life. And as a result, I was able to create the best documented, most comprehensive chronological and contextual presentation of Islam, particularly Muhammad's words and deeds. And as a result of that, I came to understand Islam, Allah, the Quran, and Muhammad better than anyone alive. Oh, there's lots of Islamic scholars that know the Hadith and know the Quran far better than I. But no one on this planet, no one, understands Islam, Muhammad, Allah and their Quran better than I do. That's why I was able to do 3,000 hours of talk radio on it and answer any question or engage in any debate. Now, it might sound braggadocious to say that, but it isn't at all. Understanding Islam is not something that one would ever brag about. It's the most Muhammad was the most reprehensible sexual pervert, reprehensible liar, deadly and ruthless terrorist who ever lived. Allah is Satan. The Quran's the worst book ever written. So to claim that you understand these things better than anyone else ain't nothing to brag about. I have written now a 1,200-page book on Paul. I am positive that there are theologians around the world that know Paul's letters, what he said, better than I do. Surprised. If there's anyone on earth that understands Paul, who he spoke for, the ploys that he used, the expressed reasons that he was so deadly and so destructive, better than I do. I don't think there's a theologian in the world that could argue successfully against me on behalf of Paul. Now, again, that's not braggadocious. I devoted 3 years of my life to understanding what I thought was the most reprehensible man who ever lived. I mean, Muhammad was perverted, terrorist, rapist. I mean, the guy's disgusting. But what Paul did is far worse than what Muhammad did. And so understanding the most deadly plague of death ever conceived isn't something you'd brag about. But I was absolutely, as it relates to those two religions, I was given the spirit of understanding. Now, if you can turn to the Torah for a moment, there are lots of Torah scholars. Most Torah scholars are really Talmud scholars. But there are some genuine Torah scholars that I am certain know the contents of the Torah better than I do. I'd be surprised if there was anyone living today that understood the spirit, the purpose, the example, the message, the invitation of the Torah better than I do. Now, again, that's not a reason to brag, because my understanding is 1/1,000,000,000 of what it should be, what it could be. But to just come to recognize that the Torah really is teaching and guidance, not laws. That it wasn't written by Moses or a gang of five people over time, but in fact inspired by Yahweh, word for word. And have come to cherish all of those words. And then to make the connections that help you understand why is it that story of the Garden of Eden is told. The single most important prophecy in the entire Torah is the story of the Garden of Eden. Because the single most important thing to know about the future is the past. We're returning to the Garden of Eden. And Yahweh makes it abundantly clear in Yahshua, we are returning to the conditions found in the Garden of Eden. I don't know if anybody else knows that other than our group. I don't think anyone else has taken the time to realize how important that story of Noah is and what it represents. And how the story of Noah is the story of the covenant and how you participate in the covenant in a word's eye view. I don't know if there's anyone who has figured out that there are five conditions that need to be met if you want to be part of the covenant. Because Yahweh asked And Abraham accepted five specific, there's five terms and conditions listed that are the benefits. Excuse me, there's five benefits of the covenant. Or that have taken the heart of the Torah, which is the invitation to meet with Yahweh, and recognize that those seven represent the seven steps to God, and each one of them is essential to the covenant. With the first four delivering each of the five benefits of the covenant. Perfection, immorality, adoption into Yahweh's family, enrichment and empowerment. And that the next three are all designed to ultimately achieve Yahweh's goal, which is to bring his people home. I don't think anyone else has figured that out. And it's essential. There's no question in my mind, and I don't think there should be in anyone's mind that has gone on this journey together, that while this particular stick has a million flaws, he has the gift of understanding that has been spiritually bestowed by Yahweh himself. Doesn't make me a prophet. Doesn't make me inerrant. Doesn't make me special to anyone other than to Yahweh, and that's good enough for me. Doesn't mean that I should have a following because I shouldn't. Doesn't mean that I should be revered because I shouldn't. Doesn't mean that I shouldn't be challenged because I should be. But it should be pretty obvious to everyone, because even those who attack me, and I know there's another group out there now that is attacking me, even those that attack me, every single one, uses what they have learned by listening to these programs or read it in the books that I have written on Yahweh's Word to even get where they are. Now, if there was any other place where you could find any of this, the feminine nature of the Spirit and what that represents, the importance of both Dod and Yosha, but far more important, Dod than Yosha. What is it that Dod revealed that is so essential to our relationship with Yahweh? Love it. I'd be the happiest guy in the world if someone who is part of this group or someone independently does a better job of translation and does a better job of explanation and provides more insights and understanding on what God has to tell us than I have done. Be the happiest guy in the world. This isn't a competition. And every one of us who is part of Yahweh's family. Now, there's some main branches. Dod was a main branch. Yosha, a main branch. But the rest of us, we're children. We're stems. And we can all be used the same way. But you've got to be willing to invest the time. You've got to be passionate about it. You've got to use the tools that Yahweh has given you. Your eyes, your ears, your mind, and the Spirit. It's one thing for the Spirit to provide understanding. It's another thing to capitalize on it. I'm going to say something that sounds like before I go on.
Yeah. Okay, sorry.
I was
going to say, I don't see how anyone could become a Torah scholar in this era and exist. They would have to have a lot of financial backing so they could dedicate that much time to it. they would have to be very open to what they're seeing in the translations. They'd have to have an open mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because you wouldn't allow yourself to go there if you came out of the frame to become that scholarly. You'd have to know something about the Bible, and you'd have to fight all those battles.
Mm-hmm.
And then what would you do with it? You couldn't stand up in a church and preach it. Or you couldn't publish it by any of the conventional means. So how would you share that if you discovered what you've discovered and
yep.
what you've, you know, I don't know
well,
how you
moreover,
could do it.
How many people, first of all, you do have to be completely independent. You can't
yeah.
work and do this. You can't have another job.
No.
And so you have to be independent so that you can do it, because you can't have any other job. And on top of that, you've got to realize that the entire satisfaction is going to be between you and Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Between the two of you.
You're not going to get a lot of support. You're going to have no enemies.
That is 100% of the satisfaction. You are going to get no support. Because even the handful of people that will be closest to you, that will benefit the most from what you're sharing, you're always on your guard, because even you just never know when somebody's going to turn on you.
Mm.
There's only one relationship you can really trust. Yahweh.
No.
And you need to know that to do this, even if you give it away free, even if you say, you know, I'm irrelevant to the whole process, but, you know, I'm going to share what I've learned. I'm going to make myself vulnerable. I'm going to do it on the radio, and I'm going to do it in writing, and I'm going to share it right from the get-go. I'm not going to withhold anything. And I'm even going to tell you, here's the thought process that went into it, and that I have absolutely no qualifications. Even if you do it that way, you're going to be attacked. And I've got three different groups that used to be affiliated with us, attacking me ruthlessly right now. You know, a new one this week. It goes with the territory. Not only is it possible to happen, it's a guarantee. If you go down this road, if you accept this job, the accolades are going to be extraordinarily few. And you can't accept them. And the criticisms will be overwhelming.
Yeah.
And constant. And widespread. And if they bug you, well, you ought not be doing it.
Boy, yeah, don't do it.
Don't do it.
Can't do it. Boy.
Wow. Yeah. Now, that doesn't mean that if you're criticized, you just roll over and play dead. You know, I don't care. They can say anything they want. No, you can't do that. You got to be like Dode. Did Dode say, you know, they're saying some really bad things that are untrue about me, but I'm just going to ignore them?
No, you said to work it straight. Yeah.
Absolutely. Anytime you are confronted by somebody's talking about something that you have done or said or a point that you have made that is hostile to what the message is, you are absolutely obligated if you're going to work with Yahweh. And the obligation is not a term with him, but God has standards. And even dented and dull implements, you've got to follow those standards. If you're not going to stand up for him and what he has to say, even when it's unpopular, you're not useful.
You.
Yeah. Not useful. Now, it's okay occasionally, like I'm writing, editing right now the 14th chapter of Yeshua. It has a section in there that I'm not comfortable with. And I, right there at the translation, I said, I'm not comfortable with this. You need to know that. It's not something that I like to hear. It's not something that I want to share. I don't like it. Just flat out don't like it. I'm going to tell you why it's here. And I'm going to tell you that my opinion doesn't matter, but, you know, since I've been the guide through this, I've always put myself on the line. I'm going to say, here's why I don't like it. But, you know, I'm not God. I'm not responsible for the care of his family. He is. And from his perspective, this is why he has to do this and why it's the right thing to do. And so, you know, I'll go that far. That's as far as I'm going to go, though. You know, there's some things that I wish God had done differently. I wish he had been made figuring out the purpose of each of the seven Moed Mikre easier. I wish he had made the terms and conditions of the covenant easier to understand. There's a lot of things I wish he had made easier. But he didn't want to. There's a reason he didn't want to. And I understand the reason, which is that, in fact, we've experienced it. There's a lot of people that can say Yahweh's name. They can say, I'm a member of the covenant, that can make claims based upon their participation when they have not internalized the message. They don't know it. They don't understand it. They haven't really accepted it. And God wants to have a filter so that he and we don't have to spend our eternity with a hypocrite, that somebody is pretending to be what they're not. And so there's a filtering mechanism, and the filter is, I didn't make it easy. Now, it's not particularly hard, but you really got to devote the time. So, JB, how long did you have to translate before you could translate? I mean, really translate. I mean, I know you started years ago.
I was going to say,
it would take you.
I've been doing it about 10 years now.
Days to do a passage.
I'll let you know when I get good at it. I'm still working.
I would never say I'm good at it. What you do is you get much better at it. The more you do it, but it takes a lot of time. Kirk, you know you're doing a lot of translating now, and from what I can tell, other than your relationship with Terry and the classes you still teach, this is dominating your time.
Oh yeah, this week I took a week off between Christmas, New Year's, nobody's going to come to class. So we get to do our inventory and all that kind of stuff. But other than a tiny little bit of work, I'm amazed how tired I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
Usually I'm wiped out by the time we get to go to air.
Yeah.
I'm going. I'm not like JB either. I mean, I'm slow. I'm way down the totem pole on this deal, and I don't mind telling you, but it just takes me a long time to look all this stuff up.
You know, it's amazing that since I stopped doing the Shattering Myth show, and we're doing just shows now on the Shabbat, the Friday shows, and I've just stopped doing everything else. I play grandpa. I enjoy my family, but I don't have any other hobbies. I've given them all up. And particularly in the last 6 months, more than any other time in my life, I've really hit my stride. And I don't know how many chapters we've put out in the last 6 months, but it's just like one every 2 to 3 weeks now.
Yeah.
And it's hard.
You can't read them as fast as you seem to be able to write them.
Oh, yeah. It's exciting and marvelous. Kirk, I told you at the end of the Shabbat, the observation show, and we're going to return to this passage here in a second, that I've never asked, because it seemed, you know, that so long as you're productive and effective and you know your place and you're devoted to it, that, you know, so long as Yahweh is continuing to work with you, that, you know, he's happy enough with the relationship. At least he's not finding any dull and dented implement that's either more willing or that's more fun to use. And, you know, he likes flawed people. It's kind of his thing. So I've never asked. I never felt the need to. And I didn't even ask this past week, but it was a night just like tonight. Tonight we're getting a beautiful snowstorm. Everything's white. And I really like fresh snow, and I walked outside early one evening, and just as plain as day, He always said, I am very pleased with everything we're doing. I'm proud of everything we're doing together. I never heard that. Never asked. But, you know, there's a lot of things that were happening. You know, it's not just the this choder and the sign. And so, you know, it's one thing to have it. I mean, I spent a week denying it. And then for God's sake, you know, if you spent a week denying it, you need to know I'm really pleased with what we're doing together. And then a friend of mine that has been my publisher, you know, for all of this time, managed all of those radio interviews that I did all those years, has been trying to get me to do a movie script for a very long time. And finally, after hearing our last couple of shows and reading these last few chapters, he said, it's time. It says, God's telling me it's time. You need to write a script. We're going to do a movie. And he's produced two beautiful movies, he and his wife, already. So it's not like, you know, write a script, we'll find a producer. No, write the script, they'll produce the movie. And they're good at it. Their movies are beautiful. So he wrote me, and it was really strongly worded. And I said, all right, Spirit, go to work. I've had so many ideas, and I'm just not comfortable with any of them. I don't want to take a story like the story of Abraham and set it in an ancient time, because that's not going to resonate with people. I need a story where the characters are interesting, where the dialogue is credible, and where we can teach without ever lecturing. We just take people along this journey to the covenant through the Torah, but with contemporary characters. We can write dialogue that's interesting and beautiful scenery. And it wasn't 5 minutes later that I had the plot and the characters and the story, how it opens and where it goes and how it reveals ultimately the neck. This story through these characters. Opening on the Gulf of Aqaba, not too far off Nuweiba Beach. Beautiful setting coming up after a scuba dive and the family recognizing what it means to have found the relics of Pharaoh's chariots on that land bridge across the Gulf of Aqaba, what that means, and how they follow that to Mount Horeb, and what they saw with their eyes, and what that means about the Torah. And there's a skeptic in the story, and a couple who want to pursue this to see where it leads, and the way that it then travels in search of the Ark of the Covenant, not the artifact so much, although they'll find that. But what it represents, which no one has talked about. And the story just started literally flowing out of me. And then we get this series of emails from Hendro. He's established a recording studio and all of the software to edit his recordings. And he has a spectacular, very deliberate voice. And he sent us sample recordings already. He's going to record the entirety of Observations for Our Time. And then we have people like Steve and others that take all of these chapters and they post them on YouTube and other places online. But that's where the recorded mechanical voice, they'll be able to replace that recorded mechanical voice with a beautiful voice that reads these. And I want to tell you that the time, the energy to do that, because I did Prophet of Doom, and it was 600 pages, and it took, I guess it was 900 pages, but it just takes forever to do this, to do it right. And Hendro has volunteered to do it. We have so many wonderful things that are happening. So it is an exciting time. And yeah, I was pleased with what we're doing. So let me return to this. The spirit providing the ability to understand, as well as the capacity to learn and ability to teach. What more important thing could Yahweh provide for us today than understanding that facilitates the ability to learn and then teach? The capability of discerning reasoned insights leading to enlightenment, facilitating their propensity to be perceptive and to make proper connections and intelligent associations, which provide a conceptual understanding. There's a lot of people that have shared what they think they've come to know about God for a long time. And almost all of them have said, these are the things of faith. I don't think there have been many that have said, there's only one way to God. And you have to think your way to Him. You know, He has proved His existence. He has demonstrated the words that He has inspired. He has provided a set of instructions that we can follow that guarantee that we will live eternally with Him. But all of that requires knowledge, understanding, comprehension. You have to make the connections, the intelligent associations, so that you come to not only understand the material, but are in a position to accept it and act upon it. At the heart of what we're doing is this very concept of learning and teaching, of making the connections to understand, and based upon that, introducing people to who Yahweh really is, what He's offering and what He's expecting from us in return. The spirit of practical advice and applicable counsel. Pertinent directions on how to properly respond, providing prudent consultation and effective mentoring, of empowerment, of inspiring aptitude and enormous capability, the capacity to achieve and accomplish the mission, and the courage, character, and confidence to prevail. You know, just this last idea, the confidence. If you're going to engage in this, you better be confident. It's essential to be confident. And is there, you know, if you look at what the Devarim is, you know, in the Torah, there's four books that Yahweh inspired, and there's one book that after inspiring Moshe said, now that I've come to listen to and understand the Torah, this is how you should implement it in your life. This is what's important. That is the entirety of Dode's Mizmor Psalms, are practical, applicable counsel, advice as to how you observe the Torah and how you engage in the covenant. What it means to be in a relationship with Yahweh. So, you know, you might understand that the spirit is our spiritual mother, the feminine manifestation of Yahweh's nature. You know, you may understand that Yoshe is a diminished manifestation of Yahweh, set apart twice from Him to fulfill the first four Moed Mikre in conjunction with the spirit. But, you know, you might understand what each of the seven Moed Mikre represents. But unless you can explain it in a way that's practical, what good is it? God wants His children to understand what he is offering and how to act upon it. And that's practical advice. Spirit of knowing and of knowledge and of recognizing where to look for answers. Of being aware of the evidence and of being able to discern what is relevant and accurate. Of discriminating between fact and fiction, right and wrong, and thereby able to recognize and acknowledge the truth. And of encouraging respect while showing reverence to and appreciating the awesome nature, outstanding character, and superlative ability, the astonishing greatness of being inspired by Yahweh. Now I've got to take a minute break here to deal with something with my puppy dog, and I'll be right back with you. But that's a mouthful. I'll be right back. Yeah, for those that don't know, because I've made a comment of it not all that long ago. I said that, you know, I've had an old dog and it was time to put her down. And I haven't put her down. She's blind. She's essentially deaf. And she has issues of incontinence. So, like, for example, when she starts walking around, if I don't move her in the direction of a door and quickly, I'm going to be sopping up pee from the carpet. I don't know if she has another week or 2 weeks left, but so long as she enjoys being petted, enjoys being eating, enjoys taking naps by my side, I keep her along. You know, she's not in any pain. Quality of life's not what it once was, but it's not bad. You know, every morning she enjoys a good pet and snacks during the day and pets, and my granddaughter just loves her and has such a good time with her. And, you know, I choose to keep her around. I'm not one to take a life prematurely. It's just not in my nature.
Yeah.
But now, and I'm going to take a break and let her back in here in a second, but the essence of being able to understand, to provide practical advice, to know, to make the necessary connections, to translate, to analyze, to learn and to teach. Core of all of that is a reverence and respect for Yahweh. If you don't know, revere, and respect Yahweh, you can't do any of it. Not well, not accurately. I don't know how many times I've said this, but as I'm translating something, and there's a whole lot of different ways that you can render a word,
yeah.
It's my love and respect for Yahweh that guides that translation. I know who he is. I know what he likes. I know what he dislikes. I know what he's offering and what he expects. And so I render the translation out of a respect for him. You know, I was not happy in Yeshaya 14. And he is really disgusted at what humanity has become. And there's a word that, for example, in the midst of this, that the primary definition is cruel. And it's being applied to Yahweh. And yet, there are other ways to translate it, like righteous indignation. And my love of Yahweh, I'm not capable of associating a word like cruel with him. I am anger because you need to know, and hate because you need to know what to be angry at and what to hate if you're going to love. And he most certainly loves, so I've got no issue with that. But cruel is, you know, it just doesn't fit. Or when you're dealing with Yahweh and you've got a choice of fear or revere, as it's associated with Yare, you just, knowing him, I know he never wants to be feared, except he actually, there is a group of people, in fact, a lot of them, that he wants to fear him, and they're going to fear him, because he is going to be extraordinarily harsh with them, and deservedly so. And so they are going to fear him. And it's appropriate that they fear him for what they have done. But his children, no. Not ever under any circumstance. Now let me go and let my four-footed friend in. I'll be right back. Passage that we talked about last week. And, you know, here I've used two-thirds of the program, and we're just now getting to where we were last week. I make no apology for that, because there really aren't a lot of things more important than what's conveyed in Yeshayah, Isaiah 11:2. Really, 11:1 and 11:2. You'd have to look long and hard to find anything more important than that, than being an implement that Yahweh can use because the way that His Spirit works through you. And that is an offer to all of us. Here we talked about the 91st Psalm, and I told you that when Yahweh first asked me to engage with Him, there was a thing there in my pocket, and I knew it was written for me. Doesn't mean that it was only written for me. Not the only children out there. This is written for all of us.
Yeah.
Every single one of us, capitalize on it. And, speaking of this stick, and his ability to approach will be based upon his perceptions and acceptance. His capacity to distinguish between right and wrong and respond appropriately, which is pleasing, drawing him very close. Well, our perception of Yahweh, our perception of the Torah, our perceptions of the covenant, our perceptions of Hebrew and of Israel, our perceptions of what the Moed Mikre represent, and then our willingness to accept these things, is what brings us to God. Nothing more, nothing less. And what is the seed of our perceptions? What is the thing that God gave us that enables us to have the capacity to distinguish between right and wrong? Where do we get our riach, is the Hebrew word here? From the Nesama.
Nesama.
Yeah, Nesama is what has to be exercised to be able to riach, to approach based upon perceptions and acceptance, based upon distinguishing between right and wrong, knowing how to respond appropriately. That is the purpose of the Nesama. With regard to reverence and respect for, here it is again, Yahweh. And not by an appearance. You know, folks, get over your fixation and fascination with Yosha. And not by an appearance will not be through a visual form which can be seen, nor any individual spiritual revelation, miraculous vision, or supernatural phenomenon. How do we develop the proper perception and acceptance of Yahweh? Observe His Torah.
Yeah.
Not by trying to follow a Jesus Christ, even if you knew what His name was. Even if you knew what He actually did.
Well, those are the things.
That's not how you get there.
It was always miracles with Paul, too.
Yeah.
Signs and wonders.
Not by appearances, not by miracles, not by miraculous visions. No. The ability to distinguish right from wrong. Nowhere to look with regard to your reverence and respect for Yahweh, not for Yosha, not for a church, not for your country, for Yahweh. And there's only one place where Yahweh introduces himself and presents who he is. So the only way you can develop reverence and respect for Yahweh is reading the words that he inspired. No other way. And not by an appearance, which can be seen by his eyes, should he decide. That's not how you judge. That's not how you decide. Also, not by hearsay. Every one of Paul's letters, even if he were telling the truth, it would be what?
Hearsay.
Yeah, he wasn't present, was he? He is not a witness. He was not present for any of this. Now, you can read Matanyah, and I wish we had it in Hebrew, but you can read Matanyah. Matanyah is not hearsay. He was an eyewitness.
Well, it is to a degree because all we have is the Greek. So all we have is the translation of it, which
yeah,
I did hearsay
I know.
As well.
I know. It is first-hand eyewitness account filtered through another language by someone, you know, 200 years later that didn't know Hebrew very well and most certainly wasn't there. But all the rest of it, with exception of portions of Yahuchanan and Revelation, it's all hearsay. So if you're going to reject hearsay, you have to reject everything Paul said. And that means that your witness to Yahweh has to be the prophets who were inspired by Yahweh. That also means that for those of you who are listening, now this was written for this particular stem. He says that that stem, he is not going to make his decision by a visual appearance based upon Yosha. He is not going to make he's not going to come to understand based upon miracles or a spiritual revelation. And he's not going to decide by hearsay, which means you've got to go to the source. You've got to go to where Yahweh is speaking in first person. But that also means for those of you who want to engage in this way, you've got to do the same thing. Now, the if you look at yada yada, right now what we're talking about isn't hearsay. Just because I'm reading it doesn't make it hearsay. We're reading Yahweh's testimony as it was revealed through Yahshua. That ain't hearsay.
No, the scroll's right there in Jerusalem.
Right. Yeah, and if you're, it's like Moshe talking and debating him about his understanding of the Torah. Even when you get to the commentary here, it's not hearsay because what we're talking about is what God just said.
Mm-hmm.
We're having a discussion about what he said, what it means. So not by hearsay, not by rumors or innuendo, not by word of mouth. That which is passed, that means you got to throw out the Talmud too. You got to throw out the Quran, even if it was saying it, it isn't. Listening, not by listening to information which cannot be verified. That's the beauty of Yahweh's Torah, prophets, and Psalms. It's all verified.
Mm-hmm.
So not with hearsay, heard with his ears. Should he make judgments? Should he offer arguments? Seek to resolve disputes, make decisions regarding vindication, complain, or hurl accusations. Chide anyone. But you can determine what's right. You can chide people. You can make accusations. You can offer arguments, so long as they're not based on hearsay.
Well, have you ever had an argument where you weren't using the Torah? I don't think so. Or your knowledge of it.
No.
No.
You know, not
I wouldn't
when,
even
when we talk
I
about
even
Torah, the Torah permeates the Mizmor and the prophets. Like, you know, I had a falling out with a really smart guy over the fact that I am very critical of the U.S. military, including critical of the U.S. military sacrificing 400,000 lives to avenge the loss of 3,000 at Pearl Harbor. And you can say, oh, well, that's your opinion. No. Yahweh was resolutely opposed to militaries. Always, 100% of the time, he is resolutely opposed to militaries. Even when he wanted people in the Promised Land eradicated, it wasn't by a military. Because, you know, you can carry a torch in one hand and, you know, a gong in the other. I don't care what you do, but, you know, this is what I want you to do. You know, I want you to go and dance around and play music. If your salvation, your people's salvation, is a result of you think of a military, you don't know Yahweh. You're not engaged in the terms and conditions of the covenant. So no, the arguments need to be based upon Yahweh's teaching.
Yeah.
But instead, he should exercise good judgment. Here it is again. I mean, this is all cerebral. Shavat. He should decide, judging for himself, adjudicating the matter, arguing and resolving disputes by being accurate, honest, and right. Maybe my favorite word in Hebrew. Tzedak, being fair and correct, in accord with the truth, avoiding any conflict or inconsistency with the established standard. With regard to the doorway, dal, pertaining to advice on opening the entrance, but also regarding the lowly and little one, and provide proof using sound arguments. With everything out in the open, doing so fairly, putting everything on the table, on the level, nothing hidden, justly and equitably. Straightforward. On behalf of the sincere who are seeking answers, ha eretz of the land. Now that can be translated of the earth and be applicable to everyone. But it is ha eretz. And while ha eretz doesn't always just mean the land, as in Israel, and in this case it may be more accurately translated, more openly, it's still, you would not be wrong in assuming that Yahweh's primary intent of all of this is he wants all of the words laid open for all to see in a straightforward manner, fairly, using sound arguments for the people that he is calling to Israel, to his children. It might be interesting also for you to know that as I'm translating the 14th chapter of Yeshayah, Yahweh makes a very profound statement. And he says that his love and compassion is for Jacob. And that he is choosing Israel, because he loves them. They are the chosen people. God himself has reminded us that he chose them in the beginning, and in the end, he is choosing them all over again. And so, to a large degree, the honest, accurate, forthright presentation of the doorway, including also that of the lowly and little one, the proof, the sound arguments, everything out in the open, fair, on behalf of the sincere, looking for straightforward answers of the land. And that really is the style of everything we've done. I mean, the books are thousands of pages. I think somebody was kidding me. He said, you know, at the rate you're going, you're going to actually get through Yeshayah, Isaiah. And I said, well, if I were to do nothing else, I could probably finish it 11 years from now at the time of the Teruah harvest, and it would be another 5,000 pages. It's a lot because we take the time to say, well, this is the reason for this. For example, Dal, the doorway.
Yeah.
It's Daleth Lamed. Lamed is the shepherd's staff. What is a D in Hebrew? How is it drawn, Kirk? You know this.
Doorway.
So you want to argue that it's not a doorway?
No, is it?
Look at the word.
Yeah. Give me a break.
Look at the word. It's not just a doorway. What is it a doorway to?
A doorway to the guy with to a, no,
the shepherd.
The fence over, of course. Yeah,
yeah, the doorway. But it's the doorway to the shepherd. Of course,
mm-hmm.
The doorway
and
to he's talking about is the doorway to Passover. It's the only doorway
yes.
to God's home. But D. Deleth Lebed is the doorway to the shepherd, which happens to be Passover, and it's the doorway to life.
Leads you to life.
Correct.
Section, everything else, yeah.
Yep. Now, this is this next passage. For anybody that has a copy of this chapter, I think I was wrong. I translated this, making the he, capital he, as in, this is Yahweh doing these things, but Yahweh's still talking about the stick, the lowly stem. That's what he's still talking about. So this he is a lowercase he, not a uppercase he, and I've corrected my copy to reflect that. I read it in preparation for this program over and over again. It says, no. In the midst of all this, there's no indication that he went to that Yeshayah is now no longer speaking of the Choder and of using the Choder and how the Choder is going to work it. So, then he will strike, verbally attacking. He will confront, crippling and disabling, the contrite, destroying and slaying, to chastise and judge the material realm. With the rod, staff, and scepter, with the implements of his mouth and the speech. And with the spirit of his lips, the language that the words that the spirit inspires, the wicked, the wrong, those who are guilty and must be condemned, are they going to be destroyed and they'll die. You know, there's a lot of people, in fact, the most recent boondoggle here in terms of a group a group that listens to this show, as a matter of fact, that has decided that they would find it gleeful to attack me, but say that it's wrong to attack or criticize anyone else other than me, of course. They're of this this belief that you ought to be nice to everybody. We ought to be just the most loving, happy-go-lucky, accepting and accommodating people on earth. Bull. Yahweh wants you to verbally attack, to use the implements of your mouth and spiritual words to condemn the wrong, to destroy them. Because unless people know that their religion is wrong, that their country is wrong, that their military is wrong, that their society is wrong, they're not in a position where they even have a chance of knowing Yahweh, much less finding their way to Him. He wants us to be like Him and to follow His example, and that is to be blunt, to be condemning, to be judgmental. He says it over and over again. This particular Choder that he's using to write his sign is verbally attacking, using the implements of his speech, the spirit of his lips, the words, to attack, to criticize, to judge those who are wrong, who are guilty and must be condemned, destroying them. I don't know what it is about. Maybe it's still the legacy of Christianity. Maybe it's the hypocrisy of political correctness that somehow causes people to think that hate is bad and that being blunt and critical is somehow wrong. No, it isn't. It's right. It's appropriate. Goes on to say, being right, correct, and honest shall become the belt, the sash around his hips, and trustworthiness and reliability, the sash girding his waist. Now, you know, I know that Everybody has been led to believe that this is talking about Yosha. Yosha's not a stick. That it's talking about maybe Dode. No.
Stickula.
Dode's not a stem, not a stick. Sorry. It's talking about just a secondary relevant branch up there somehow that is grafted into a secondary limb that grows out of the primary limbs, Dode and Yosha, and the tree of life that Yahweh has planted, rooted in Yisrael. And he's saying that he is equipping that individual, and therefore any of us are chodesh, we're all grafted into the same tree, to be right, to be correct, to be honest, to be trustworthy and reliable.
You know what he says about the stick from the first one you read? He said he's, you know, abundance of fruit, being productive while encouraging productivity from others. Well, just about everybody that is involved here is come out of the, you know, from the same chitter.
Correct.
So, I mean, what's the big deal? I mean, I'm delighted. Why would I object to that or be upset by that? I mean, be the chowder. I like it. Keep writing, man.
Yeah.
I'm not shining you on. For goodness sakes,
we're all called to be a chowder. All of us. We all have that opportunity.
Can I say one other thing?
Sure.
I used to be a scratch caller, but I wasn't that good. You know, I don't shoot the 65s and things. I mean, real good golfers do. But I hung around with golfers who did. And I was amazed how much better, even though it was a couple of strokes, I was amazed at how good I could get just by hanging around them. I don't have a problem with people who are a lot better at everything I like to do, hanging out with them and learning what they do. I mean, why would that should...
Well,
it's not a jealousy thing. It's just,
you know, when I began this program, I said, you know, I wish I would be delighted if somebody else were writing books based upon translations and the insights and the analysis of the words and the thought process and coming to insights about who Yahweh is and what he's offering and asking in return. For me, that person has become Dode.
Yeah.
That's the person I hang around. But, you know, I'm coming to like Yasha Yah a lot. Spending a lot of time with him, too.
Yeah.
You know, those are the people I hang with. Yeah. And, you know, it might sound incredulous to somebody to hear that, okay, I found somebody that I think is really smart, that I really enjoy listening to, that I spend a lot of time with, and, you know, their names happen to be Dode and Yasha Yah. Then, you know, the guy that I find is the most interesting to listen to happens to be Yahweh. I spent a lot of time listening to him. That works. Now, I'm going to tell you what follows. This is an interlude here. I do not claim to be right on this. I'm just going to share my thoughts. Probably the best thing to do here is just to read some of this to you, because I don't know if I can share it in any more concisely than I wrote it some time ago. But the following passage is often cited, even pictured, in conjunction with the Christian myth of the Second Coming, to suggest a state of nirvana. But it's an odd collection of animals, and even a more troubling choice of verbs, if that were the intent. Moreover, since God designed some animals to be carnivores, some to be herbivores, and others omnivores, how and why is all that going to change? Are we to believe that wolves and leopards are going to thrive by grazing, which would require a complete redesign of their digestive systems? Is mankind going to go vegan and forego the feast, even Passover? Further, since the wolf and the lamb are in direct opposition, in Yahweh's plan, with one representing the deadly plague of Pauline Christianity and the other Passover's door to life, why is the former being depicted as a guest of the latter? So perhaps, rather than view this unnatural situation replete with revisionist animals who no longer eat as they were designed, somehow forsaking their nature and living together in an idyllic setting. We might want to consider it in context, cognizant of the fact that we've just read that Yahweh's word and spirit are going to strike, condemn, and slay those who are wrong. And from that perspective, to dwell as a stranger isn't the only way the verb, the next verb, it's gur, can be translated. Three of its four connotations are rather sinister. To gur is to stir up trouble and strife while being quarrelsome. Worse, gur speaks of planning a harmful response, of being rebellious and inciting a riotous situation, even initiating a fight. As a result, gur is to terrify, instilling fear, while causing severe anxiety. Now, that doesn't sound idyllic to me. It is, therefore, conceivable that this reference to the wolf in conjunction with the lamb suggests that Paul will no longer prey on Yisrael, and that the religion he inspired will come to be an alien and a stranger in the land. The trouble he stirred up, his attempt at negating the purpose of the Passover lamb, will no longer haunt God's people. Therefore, might this actually depict the conditions experienced prior to Yah's return rather than immediately after it? Once again, I'm going to provide the information, and you can all judge for yourself. I'm admittedly squeamish and don't enjoy the sight of a wolf pack killing a lamb so that they can feed their pups and live. I don't have a dog in this fight, so I'd be delighted with a world without carnivores. And I'm so squeamish when I watch Discovery programs, you know, that speak of, show signs of animals being maimed and killed to feed carnivores. I can't watch those parts.
Yeah, we flip the dial.
You know, I'm just a wussy when it comes to that stuff. So, I mean, to tell you that I'd be happy with this kind of world. But, you know, God didn't consult
Let's be real.
With me when he designed it as it is. And, you know, my opinions don't matter. So, with my opinions being irrelevant here, what do God's words actually reveal when they're fully exposed? So, here's that first statement. So, then the wolf, the Zeev, the predatory mammal, perhaps representing the most infamous Benjamite Paul, the wolf in sheep's clothing, shall dwell as an alien, stirring up trouble and strife, while being quarrelsome as a result of his insidious plans, gur, will sojourn as a stranger, congregating with the flock, while possibly leading many of them astray, squeamish, scheming a harmful and treacherous, deceitful response by being rebellious and inciting an adversarial situation, making a fight by instigating an attack, causing severe anxiety. Call perfect. Actually doing so, but for a limited, finite period of time. With the lamb, in association with the dominant ram, used almost exclusively in the Torah in conjunction with Pesach. And the leopard, Nemir, the panther, the spotted and camouflaged or black predator, from an unused root meaning to be limpid and thus transparent regarding its nature and purpose. By the way, it's one letter shy of the Babylonian king Nimrod. Nemr. Will lie down and stretch out, or will lie in wait, crouched beneath and ready to pounce. An association with the young kid, the Gadi, the young goat from Gad, fortuitous. Gad is also the seventh son of Jacob. And Yadah, that which divides and cuts off. Then the adolescent calf, the weaned cow from a gull, to revolve, coming full circle. And the young lion, Kafir, often used as a metaphor for Yahudah, from Kafik, to connect, and Kafar, to cover, will be together at the same time, in one accord, or all together in one place, united and alike. And an insignificant katan a simple and unimportant, easily understood, or alternatively, a lowly and little one. From Coot, detestable and loathed child. Relatively young man, but also a scattered sheep who is stray and a lost soul, soon to die and be swept away. She'll motivate them, being carried away with them. The hog, Bahim, will be direct with them, or will forcibly drive them away and be carried off by them. Now, the last two statements, and particularly the one, the concluding one, can be rendered positively or negatively. While the first example is considerably more credible, presented as the Pauline Christian crusade against the Passover lamb. The second statement is well suited to follow in this negative vein with the transparent, dark and camouflaged predator, another reference to the wolf in sheep's clothing, lying in wait and ready to pounce on the unsuspecting kid. Now, as we've discussed, the initial verb ger isn't benign, making the opening statement a challenge to present positively when the full implications of the word are considered. Similarly, the second verb, rabatz, has a light and a dark side. Moving to the third prophecy, nahag, isn't the customary word for lead, but instead one which suggests either motivation or compulsion, of driving people in one direction or the other, and of being carried off with them. Further, the adolescent calf could represent currently estranged individuals of the age of reckoning who are old enough to make their own decisions and who have come full circle, becoming what they were intended. And the kafar could represent Yehuda. If those implications are accurate, then the third prophecy might address the insignificant sprout who will confront Pauline Christianity based upon the life and words of Dodd, motivating accountability and open-minded Yisraelites who are willing, and Yehudim, to follow him back to Yahweh. Now, should the Egel represent unthinking animals meandering in a circular fashion, lost and going nowhere, or serve as an allusion to the golden calf worshipped by those who were the first to reject the Torah? And if the lion is a Jew acting as a vicious beast, then we're back to a Benjamin stalking cows in the pasture and driving them away from God. In such case, it would be Na'ar, the lowly and little one, the Latin meaning of Paulos, leading almost everyone astray into their demise. Also, the vicious lion could be Babylon, whose gates and temples were adorned by winged lions. And this brings us right back to Pauline Christianity, as it shares much in common with the Beast of Babel. Also interesting, Babel will be specifically announced in the opening line of Yeshaya, Isaiah 13. When confronted by passages which can be interpreted in various ways, I'm inclined to consider every possibility, and then migrate towards the ones which make the most sense in the context of the discussion. In this case, I'm prone to seeing the first two predictions negatively, and the third as either the consequence of the problem or its cure. And thus consider all of this taking place prior to Yahweh's return, and not before. But fellas, this is one of the many places, and now we are still recording but no longer broadcasting, this is one of the many places where it is very possible that I'm wrong and that there's a better interpretation. This is one of the places where someone could come up with a better interpretation and I could still be, partly right. Mm-hmm. So there is a possibility, it's any one of the possibilities of there are multiple right answers, there are multiple wrong answers, we're all wrong, we're all right, one of us is right, one of us is wrong. And, I don't much care, really don't,
if
my interpretation here is right or wrong, because I was open and honest about it. I said, here it all is. This is what the words mean. You can interpret them positively or negatively. This is what the animals represent. Here's the thoughts behind it. This is my take on it based upon all of that, but, you know, you're free to draw your own conclusions. You know, when you do that, the worst possible outcome is you've encouraged people to think. Right? And by saying, you know, this is my thoughts, but I could be wrong here, you're admitting that, you could be wrong. And I think that's helpful.
Yeah. Well, you've always been open like that. I mean, that's, we admire that in you.
As I tell everybody, I could be wrong. It wouldn't be the first time. Probably ain't going to be the last time.
I would love for
probably wrong more often than I'm right.
Dig into this. And, make your own conclusion. But I would say that before we move on, if you're looking for the fatling, because if you're reading an English Bible, you're going to read about the fatling after the appearing after the calf and the lion. Well, the fatling does not exist in any of the Qumran scrolls. And the Wa Meriah, the fattened and embittered animal, therefore wasn't germane to this discussion. Now, as we progress in this prophecy, the word for cow changes from what it was previously, egel, to para, which carries the connotations of being ineffectual and disappointed, and of being frustrated and broken, in addition to being fruitful. Also, while dab can be translated bear, and that's how every English Bible renders it, it makes far more sense to render it as the boar. 50-50 choice here. No one really knows if it's the boar or the bear. I prefer boar because swine will eat anything. And that's really the message that's being conveyed here. Now, but that's just the beginning of where we're going, because we're confronted by yet another challenge as we strive to correctly convey Yahweh's intent. The next verb is ra'ah. Oh, boy, how many times, Kirk, have we come across ra'ah?
That is
equally comfortable. Right. Yeah, it's equally comfortable speaking of a shepherd who leads and guides, feeds and protects. But it's a raw word. It means immoral and perverse.
Can be.
Yeah, corrupting one's companions. Oh. Hebrew words with a dark and light side is extraordinarily common. You would you'd have to look long and hard to find one with a brighter and darker cast than raw. Now, the second verb, rabats, as we've already learned, means to lie down. Now, it can be to lie in wait. Now, either, you know, that can be a good thing or a bad thing. You know, what are you lying in wait for? You're lying in wait to pounce?
Maybe the second.
You're lying in wait ready for, you know, the next move for, it's... What are you lying in wait for? And as was the case with cow, the word for lion changes from kafir to aryeh, a considerably more negative label. There's nothing, kafar, is the word that is translated reconciliation. Well, not aryeh. It denotes the adverse ideas of being a fierce and destructive beast stalking its prey, ready to gather them together and pluck them away one by one. Further, and if that were not enough, we're greeted by a third word for cow. And by the way, as I say, the third word here now for cow is bakar. What I'm hoping to convey here is there's lots of options. And you really ought to be thoughtful and consider the options and ponder the implications and enjoy this process. And not pretend that a English translation that renders three different words cow is telling you the whole truth. You know, we need to think all of this through. There's a lot going on. And you ought to enjoy the process rather than be frustrated here. Just look at it as a challenge. What can I learn? Do both the dark and light sides apply? What's the timing? What's the, you know, for example, we're re-engineering the nature of these beasts and, you know, eliminating carnivores, would have to speak of a time after his return.
Yeah.
I don't see that happening because, you know, I think we're still going to participate in Pesach. And you know, there's going to be work. It's the millennial Shabbat is not a period of just complete and total, go take a nap. I mean, there's work to be done.
We have to raise children and everything.
So absolutely. Sure. Yeah, there's work to be done. As a matter of fact, those who have been oppressive to Israelites and who have enslaved them are going to become slaves to do much of the work. So, I don't think that's the case. And if the context is before his return, then you want to use the negative implications because God's really disgusted with what humanity has become. So anyway, the third word now for cow is bakar. Bakar is that, by the way, is used throughout the creation account as well. You know, it's translated mourning there, but it bakar is a very diversified word. It can represent anything from cattle, especially in large herds, to bull and oxen, which became Satan's preferred guise in many pagan religions, especially those that prevailed in Egypt, Babylon, Assyria, Canaan, Phoenicia, and on Crete with the Minoans. In fact, Lisa just passed on an article to me that the Greeks, the DNA proves that the Greeks were Minoans. So the Minoan culture of the Greeks, the Minoan culture and the Minoan DNA became what we know as Greece. That is from whence they were derived. So they had a huge head start. They weren't their own indigenous people. The Greeks, as we know them, were Minoan. Yeah, from Crete. Further, the bakar were used by the religious during early morning sacrifices, which were conducted secretly. And lastly, since teben, dry and brittle straw, is worthless from a nutritional perspective, we are compelled to look at alternative meanings. So here's the statement. The cow, the parah, the fruitful, from par or bull, parar to frustrate, to break, to disappoint, and to make ineffectual. And the boar, or the bear, who will eat anything, from debob to skim over and defame, will be shepherded or will be herded by immoral companions with perverse and common interests. Together, as one unified and at the same time, their youth, their young children, will lie down, will stretch out, or will lie in wait, ready to pounce. And the lion, the fierce and destructive beast which stalks its prey from raw to gather together and pluck away, light, similar to the cattle, bakar, the large herds of animals, especially bulls or oxen, as part of a morning sacrifice, shall consume, shall be fed, dry and brittle straw, teben, chaff or stubble, the binder and clay bricks, not to be confused with hay. I didn't know this, but you know that straw is the stalk of the grain that is cut down once the usable kernels have been harvested and it has withered?
Mm-hmm.
Straw can be used as bedding for barnyard animals.
Yeah, we used
it. Or as a crude binder in bricks. But it has virtually no nutritional value. Now, hay, on the other hand, is cut before the grass goes to seed, because that is when the most nutrients can be found in the stalk. Without dried grasses combined in the mix, the remaining stubble or chaff comprising straw following the harvest of the grain offers little more than fiber. Therefore, neither lion nor ox can survive on straw. Nutritionally, it is as worthless as our religious beliefs. Worse than let them eat cake, it would be let them munch on their bedding and the stubble inside of bricks. So, God is making another 3 points. And we are left to determine whether this is transpiring before his return or after, and thus whether it is good or bad, personally. I don't see any merit to cows and boars being shepherded together. One is food, the other is not. However, I can envision frustrated and broken people who will eat whatever is put in front of them being misled by immoral compatriots with perverse interests. And I can see all of them lying down in the mud together, oblivious to what's transpiring around them. Happening today, we refer to this as Chrislam. You know, likewise, I don't envision God changing the digestive systems of the animals and then providing his creation with worthless fodder. So I'm prone to see both predator and prey starving for lack of a nutritious meal during the days preceding Yahweh's return. But, you know, if you view it otherwise, I'm sure you can tell from the tone of my voice that I really don't think so, but that's fine. I mean, if there's a way to make it make sense for afterwards, and you've got a way to do that, and it's consistent with Yah's nature and consistent with the etymology of these words, then that's great.
I'm all ears.
I would be happy to witness an end of the current cycle of life. As we move forward, I suppose the case can be made that Yah is going to transform in this next statement a poisonous viper into a lovable meerkat, and that nursing mothers will encourage their children to play with deadly serpents. As John Lennon would say, just imagine, there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us only sky. Imagine all of the people living for today. Imagine there's no countries. It's not hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for. No religion, too. Imagine all of the people living in peace. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us, and the world will be as one. Now, I don't want to be a great communist killjoy. It has a catchy tune, but I'd be remiss if I didn't point out that John Lennon is D-E-A-D. He was shot to death on a sidewalk not long after promoting this vision of utopia. And he was so happy with his life, he was typically drugged out of his mind. Now, as we strive to understand the next set of predictions, the initial verb, sha'a, like those preceding it, can be rendered positively or negatively. It can be translated plain, being amused and having fun, or being blinded, having one's eyes closed, losing one's sight in the process of fondling or caressing something. Fortunately, there is no mistaking the deadly and damning aspects of pethen, poisonous vipers, is where the word python came from, or siphone. Both are used in conjunction with Satan, his demons, and their poisonous religious schemes. As such, rather than render this next statement as a depiction of all people living life in peace, following Yahweh's return during the Sukkah celebration, I see this occurring during Satan's rise to power. This is Yeshayah 11:8. And the suckling infant, the nursing baby, will be blinded while playing. Will close their eyes and be while delighting, having fun, losing their perception of sight in the process of fondling, caressing, and finding amusement over the pit, out shore, over the den, the hole, or depression of the venomous viper, pithen, the poisonous snake. It's an unused root meaning to twist. And upon the illuminated nest, the cavities in the grounds where reptiles of lesser light dwell, for more light, of the deadly serpents, siphony, of the lethal and toxic adders, from an unused root meaning to extrude, a mythical beast akin to a dragon. And the weaned and reared, those who are now accountable for their actions and who can earn what they deserve, shall place his hand, will put his hand inside of that same space. Now, I suspect this is the consequence of taking one's children to church or sending them to a mosque, even letting them see a movie produced by the politically correct of Hollywood, or playing a war game on a video console. Parents are pushing their children towards the devil, encouraging them to play with the adversary. Our Heavenly Father isn't about to let any of this happen, not in his home. Heaven will continue to be a serpent-free zone, as will be the earth during 999 of the 1,000 years of Sukkah. They shall not perpetrate evil. That's one of your favorite Ra'ah words. Lo, Ra'ah. They will not harm, trouble, or mistreat. And they shall not corrupt. Lo, Shakat. They will not ravage or ruin, mar or blemish anything in association with my set-apart mountain. Because the land shall be full of information which can be known about Yahweh, just as the waters cover the sea. You know, they'll play with snakes. They'll put their hands into their dens. Can't allow us any of these snake dens or any of these serpents to mar his set-apart mountain. Because there, it's going to be full of information which can be known about Yahweh. That is where he's going to fulfill his promises. So this is really an interesting set of statements, these last four or five that we have just considered. Where does it lead? You know, how do you want to render them, to understand them? What are they teaching you? And I think all of this, as the lead-in was just prior to his return. That's when the Choder is preparing to speak, to write. That's before his return, and I think all of this is still prior to his return, which is why he says, you know, I'm just not going to let them corrupt my set-apart mountain. This is where I want to have the land and that mountain be full of information that guides people to a knowledge of me. Now, this is the... excuse me, I still have a cough from that flu I had 2 weeks ago. Feeling fine, but the nagging cough. The next statement I've come to see as observations for our time. And this is what it says. Then he... Now, this is Yahweh. We've already tracked to Yahweh. Yahweh's going to protect his set-apart mountain. He's going to make sure that Moriah and Zion continue to provide all the information we need to know about Yahweh. It says, then he, so this is now Yahweh, will lift up. He will bring forth and raise. He will accept and make prominent. He's going to bear and support, call perfect, literally and totally, for a specific period of time. A standard, serving as a banner and signal, a neck, a prominent sign or insignia hoisted high on an upright pole for all to see, serving as an ensign and signal to convey important information which should be followed to bring people into the proper encampment, masculine singular. It's from Nakak and Naka. That which is anointed, set apart, prepared, designated and authorized to serve by pouring out that which can be tested. 4, the Gentile nations. La ha goyim, to approach and on behalf of a confluence of many different people living outside of Israel, from far away, from afar, a great distance away, and in the distant future. And he will attract attention, this is he, capital He, Yahweh, will attract attention nonverbally. He will reveal the signal by drawing attention to it. This is used to describe the piping that which pierces the air and penetrates the ears of a shepherd calling for sheep. He will attract attention to it from the ends of the earth. And behold, in a very brief period of time, voiced at the speed of light, it will come.
How did you feel the first time you read that, translated that?
That
did you get it? Did you?
I spent the next 2 weeks denying it.
Yeah.
I'm really happy to be associated with the neck. When it first came up, this was a sign being lifted up in conjunction with Yahweh and Dode working together to plant this extraordinary vineyard on Mount Moriah, and then to have man trash it. And Yahweh said, I'm going to lift up a sign specific to the importance of that vineyard. And what I did with Dode and what we did together and how man has trashed it. Now, that was a prophecy that I'm the only person on the planet that's going to get a kick out of it and say, hey, that's really nice. I kind of appreciate the mention. But it was a nameless, the person wasn't named, there was no reference to it. It was a really minor prophecy that everybody had read over, they don't think anything about the vineyard, that didn't mean anything to anybody except to me. And I thought, hey, that's really neat. I got kind of excited about that. I was thrilled to just be mentioned in such an inconspicuous way. I quite honestly, I hated this. And I hated it because this is not a small prophecy. This is the entire 11th chapter of Yeshayah. The entire chapter is devoted to this. And it commences with a prophecy that Christians have been misled to think is speaking of their Jesus Christ. It isn't speaking of him, and it's not speaking of Dode, neither one of them are Choders. And I was thrilled to be a Choder. We're all Choders. Great. What a thrill. That's affirming that we're irrelevant, dented, dirty, flawed implements, but in the right hands. That we're grafted into the tree of life. All of us, but I didn't want to be the Choder of that prophecy that writes the neck, the sign. No.
Yeah.
Way above my pay grade, way above my comfort level.
Comfort zone.
I knew that if I accepted that, the criticism would be resounding. And I...
Well, I'm shocked by that. Really, truly, I am. I mean, the whole time I've been shocked by that. Opposed to who else?
Yeah, that part I didn't like. So I spent days refuting it. In the first rendering of this chapter, all the way through, there was absolutely no... the conclusion I thought was obvious, and I didn't want to make it, so I didn't make it. And I sent the chapter out without making it.
Mm-hmm.
And, a woman I've never met, never spoken to, but I've exchanged a lot of emails with, and I really, really like. Jackie, the one that is the most important editor. And she has a lot of people to work with her now in editing these chapters. But Jackie, and only the way that she would do it, said, it's obvious that Yahweh is speaking of observations for a time. There's no other rational choice in any of this. And since he is devoting this prophecy to it, and it's being lifted up, this is the first mention is for the for Gentiles, because it's going to be lifted up far away from Israel at a late time. But then it goes in, the neck is mentioned twice more. The next time it's mentioned, it's used to draw his people back home. If Yahweh devoted this to it, aren't you at cross purposes with God if you're denying it? You know, the only reason that he would be referencing it is to let his children know that they can trust these translations, yes, that they can rely on this sign because it was his spirit that made it possible, his words that are reflected on it, and that he is the one that has endorsed this project, authorized it,
yeah,
and is lifting it up. And for you to deny it just because you don't want the exposure, you don't want because it changes everything for me. I go from just being a guy who's having a lot of fun learning this stuff and sharing it to this is a lot of responsibility. How many times have I told you I don't want responsibility?
Yeah.
I just enjoy the this changes everything. That's why I think a week ago I walked outside and Yahweh said, I'm pleased with everything we're doing together. So, relax. It's okay. Just relax. It's going to be okay. But, in her very kind way, Jackie says, you're putting yourself at cross purposes with Yahweh if you deny it. And you're foregoing the primary gift that you've been given, which is making the necessary connections to understand. Don't do that. It's not right. So, I rewrote the chapter and I sent it out and asked for various people's input. And you guys both sent me a letter, as did. In fact, all but two of the eight people that I sent it out to have sent me a response. One has had company and promised to send a response, just hasn't done it yet. And one has already gone south on us. Somebody hasn't responded to any email I've sent them in over a month now. So I don't know why I sent it to them, but I probably shouldn't have. So what I got back was interesting in a way. And it was JB's, it was your email that was just strange. Strange in the sense, I had written a two-page denial. I said, listen, we're all choders. I'm happy to be a choder. We're all choders. I don't want to be the choder of this prophecy because that's too important. But we're all choders. It's great to be a choder. It's great to be an implement used by Yahweh. And we're all, every covenant member is a choder. Let's embrace being a choder. But I said, there's other answers for, other than observations for a time being the neck. And I wrote it all and then I just got back to it, and I said, wait a minute. No. The only way that there could be something else is for Yahweh to speak through a Nabi, a prophet. And he's not talking about bringing in another prophet. There's no mention of another prophet. You don't call prophets sticks and stems. Prophets don't write psalms, signs. They write Torah. No. He's not doing it that way. He's doing it with a pencil, a stick, an implement, an insignificant one at that. And so I I left the negation in, but end up saying I don't think it plays. I don't think it works. And then after I came to that conclusion, I walked back to my desk, and there was JB's email saying, you know, I wanted to figure out another alternative. I was predisposed to have another answer as well. And he says, but the only other answer is a prophet. And it doesn't say prophet. And so this is not the real prophet. And that doesn't leave us with any other alternative. So it's certainly our responsibility.
Yeah, especially when you aimed at the people it's aimed at, far more than just another bunch of Gentiles, although we can all benefit from it. Thank goodness. But, I mean, this is for them. They're his most
correct.
Beloved people. Are you kidding?
That is correct.
Yeah.
Now, this is what it says next. And it shall come to pass in that day. The root of Yishe, who to show the way, Asher, my favorite word. You know, when I see Asher in this, and I just bend over and say, oh, come on. Yeah, you're making it hard to deny. I'm only here because of Asher, for those that don't know. I think most people listening to the program know that Asher is the word that brought me to Yahweh. It means to reveal the correct path to walk and to give meaning to life, to receive the benefits of the relationship. And it shall come to pass in that day. This is a day very distant from the time the prophet was writing, in a very faraway place. Shall come to pass in that day that the root, the foundation, and the root of the matter, that which is extracted and mined from the source by those who dig deep, that which keeps one firmly anchored, permanently positioned, and properly nourished, and thus informed of Yishe, to stand out and be noticed. Who to show the way, who to reveal the correct path to walk, to give meaning to life, and to receive the benefits of the relationship, will stand up and present himself. Will take a stand, presenting the means to evaluate the one who appointed and sustains him, providing the means to evaluate the evidence and make a thoughtful decision as a signal and banner. In other words, the choder, that stem, and the neck, the sign, they're inseparable. The choder stands up and presents himself as the signal and banner. Spoken word, written word, identified. Why? Am-El, for God's family. And it will come to pass in that day that the root of Yishe, to stand out and be noticed, root meaning to extract and mine from the source by digging deep, to be firmly anchored, permanently positioned, and properly nourished in thus informed of Yishe, to stand out and be noticed, who to show the way, Asher, to reveal the correct path, to give meaning to life, will stand up and present himself. Ahmad will take a stand, presenting the means to evaluate the one who appointed him and sustains him as law for and concerning a signal and banner, a neck, a standard bearer, a sign, an ensign, something which is lifted up to communicate a message to those who are observant. For God's family. Amen. Through him, Gentiles, Goyim, will seek. Darash, they will inquire about, search, investigate. Look for, expecting to find a responsible presentation about engaging in the relationship which is nourishing and keeps them safe. Goyim. And so therefore, his, capital H, restful residence, his place of repose and reflection, his comfortable habitation from Nuach, his spiritual contentment, and Nawa, living in a spiritual dwelling and abode where sheep abide, will exist as a glorious reward, existing as a source of enrichment and empowerment. The neck helps the Gentiles who are seeking to know Yahweh. It is being lifted up, Yisrael. And those who read it, who listen to it, who avail themselves of Yahweh's word as it's presented in it, well, they're going to find his restful residence. They will become the reward, existing as a source of enrichment and empowerment. It's a pretty darn good result.
Sure.
And so, excuse me, we'll continue on this next week. But that's pretty exciting.
It's thrilling.
And by the way, that's the second mention of neck. There's another one. And another one is when Yahweh calls his children home, he uses this sign to warn the Gentile nations not to intervene. Don't get in his way. As he brings his children out of them and to Yisrael, part of the purpose of the sign is to say, it is not in your best interest to interfere with what I'm trying to do. Don't get in my way.
Kind of like Yahweh.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd rather do. Yeah, my closest friend. Yeah, my team.
Well, that's amazing. That already
our
worked.
Team. Still,
this is amazing.
My closest friend. It is amazing, isn't it? It is.
Yeah.
It is really, really exciting and humbling and inspiring, but, you know, a little bit scary. A little bit unnerving.
It is the creator of the universe and his plan coming to fruition.
Yeah, but you know, the good thing is,
yeah,
it's only a sign. Yeah. We're not responsible for the Torah, prophets, and Psalms.
No.
We're not responsible for the solution. It's not our mikre, it's his.
Yeah.
It's not our covenant, it's his.
Yeah.
It's not our land, it's his. It's not our people, they're his. He's the doer.
Yeah.
He's the means behind all of this. All we are is, but still, you know, it's kind of scary. All we are is a sign that says, that way. That's the right way. We're a sign pointing in the right direction towards all that he is, all that he has done, all that he is offering, all that he is asking, all that he represents, all that he has conveyed, we're a sign pointing in that direction.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at it that way, it's okay. You know, the sign doesn't have to be perfect. It's just got to point in the right direction. You know, the words written on the sign are his. Yeah, just conveying them in English because it's the lingua franca of the world. And in fact, if you were to look at the 14, 15 million Israelites in the world today,
mm-hmm.
one language
English.
That almost all of them speak is English. You know, maybe a little less than half of them, maybe a third of them overall, probably a third of them, speak Hebrew. So about a third speak Hebrew. And about 75 to 80% speak and understand and can read English. And that's also true with a significant percentage of at least open-minded. There we are. I bid you adieu. We've gone 40 minutes past our normal recording time. My throat is still too ticklish. I have on in the background the only bowl game that I was going to watch this season, and there's not much reason for me to watch it. The sound has been off, but it is USC is playing the Ohio State University. I went to the University of Spoiled Children but they were losing 17 to nothing for those who were football fans. I'm not much of a football fan. I particularly don't like NCAA football because I have no respect for the NCAA. I think it's a farce. And I used to be an NFL fan, and I'm this year I watched very, very few games. I'm losing my interest in the NFL, and I've just about lost all my interest in college football. And seeing Ohio State trounce USC is not my idea of a really good time. I'm happy to have missed it. And though I have recorded it, there is no reason to to re-aggravate myself.
Before you hang up, let me ask you one quick question.
Yeah. Sure.
I on the cover, Observations for Our Time, I can darken all the letters so they read very well, much stronger. And if I add under by Craig Wynn, also known as Yada, Burrow type on the Yada, would that do it?
Yeah. Yeah, the only thing I would like is just a little more contrast. You know, like particularly if you look at the current books, you look at the spine of the current books, if you're 4 feet away from them, the contrast between the letters and the background that they're in is such as the tone and the contrast, you can't read it. Obviously, I can't read it.
Okay.
And, you know, the spine of a book you should be able to read, you know, you just can't see it. I would like more contrast. But then again, you know, as I mentioned, even when Jackie brought it up, and I CC'd on it, is that I used to be really into graphic design. That was, you know, the kind of an essence of one of the companies that, in fact, two of the companies that I was in is graphic design. I'm not in graphic design anymore.
Yeah.
I've never been an artist. You're an artist.
It's more about the letters and reading them well. I was trying to get a little artsy-fartsy there, you know, make it look like it's carved into the stone. But I wonder if they don't read it, then there's no point. So if you can't see it.
Contrast is such that it's hard to read. And,
I can see.
And so when she asked me about my opinion, like she wanted she recommended it. A scroll of the Torah like you would see in a synagogue Shemar Torah. And I don't want that because it is going to read synagogue to most people. It's going to read religious. Mm-hmm. We're not going to see it that way, but the people who will be handed it would see it that way. I want to see it as old. I want to see it as chiseled in stone. I thought your approach was much better. So my only thought was, if we can make the contrast sharper, cleaner, better, that would be that would get it done. You know, these books are very inexpensive for the length of them, and so you're not sending it to a guy that's going to spend a fortune on color separations.
Yeah, I understand it. Discovered. But that's not a problem. I'll make it so easy. I'll make it as easy for them as I possibly can.
Okay.
All righty.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yes.
All right. Keep on writing. Keep on writing. Keep on learning.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Okay. I'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye. Okay. Bye.